This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we roll along on your Friday, getting you ready for the weekend. Coming up, Brian Davis will join us in Austin. Austin, American statesman. We'll talk about the Texas Longhorns landing Arch Manning. Not only about the ramifications of this for Steve Sarkisian, but kind of getting a little background on how Steve Sarkisian pulled this off. And it's just a remarkable story arc, as we've talked about earlier today, of where Sarkisian was not that long ago, if you really think about it, when he was getting fired at USC, and sort of the many steps it took to get to a point where now he's the head coach at Texas, and also landing one of the biggest recruits in a very, very long time in the state of college football, the nephew of Eli and Peyton Manning and the grandson of the great Archie Manning. We'll talk to him about that coming up at 40 past the hour. I, honest to God, I don't mean to spoil your weekend, but I have to bring it up because it's a story that is developing in baseball that I just don't think I can ignore any longer. I tried to hold this off just to see if it was fluky, just to see where this was going, but I can't stop anymore. The New York Yankees are amazingly fantastic. The numbers the Yankees are putting up, they are 52-18. 52-18. They have a 12.5 game lead over the Toronto Blue Jays, who people predicted would win the division. They lead Tampa Bay by 14.5 points. People predicted them to win the division. They are clobbering the ball. They have a 146 run differential. And here's the thing. Every single thing about this team is being compared to either the 27 Yankees or the 61 Yankees, whatever teams in Yankee lore that have been great, the 98 Yankees. They have the best record in Major League Baseball. You know who has the second best record in Major League Baseball right now? The Mets. The Mets are 45-26, but the Yankees are tearing it up. Last night, they trailed 6-3 in the bottom of the ninth inning against the Astros. And then Aaron Hicks hit a three-run home run, and Aaron Judge had an RBI single bringing in Jose Trevino, and they won the game with four runs in the bottom of the ninth inning. The Yankees have won 12 of their last 14 games. They had an 11-game win streak earlier this season. I know for some of you, roll your eyes, but it's real. The Yankees are the best team in Major League Baseball heading into July. It's Tony D, Ron Culver's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Again, Brian Davis is going to join us in Austin. We'll talk Arch Manning going to Texas. You know what I was thinking about yesterday when that news came down? And I thought in the end he'd go to Georgia. I don't know. I didn't have any inside information or anything like that. It was just a gut feeling. I just had a feeling he was going to Georgia. You know where I knew he wasn't going to go? I knew he wasn't going to go to Ole Miss, and I knew he wasn't going to go to Tennessee. I think a kid like him just knows that, look, I'm not playing against anything legendary. I'm not going up against anything in my family that they were here. I'm definitely not going to Ole Miss to compete against the legacy of my grandfather and my uncle, and I'm not going to Tennessee to do that either. I think I need to go to my own place, my own location, and forge my own legacy there. Now, that doesn't mean that if something goes wrong at Texas, he doesn't like being at Texas, whatever it is, he may go to the friendly confines of a place like Ole Miss and continue the family legacy there. But I think when you have that much kind of hype around you and you kind of want to forge your own path, I think he wasn't going to go to Oxford or Knoxville. But I thought Georgia was on the list. I didn't think he was going to go to LSU at all. I know nobody really kind of felt that, but it was on the list of, like, whenever a recruit picks a school, the media always selects, literally he has offers from everywhere, right? But they usually pick a bunch that he was really considering, or you just want to throw in there. Like, he chose Texas over blah, 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 right? On the list was Clemson, Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, Georgia. those were on the, you know, they were on the Arch Manning foregoed all of those to go to Texas list. I never thought he would go to LSU. For whatever reason, the Mannings just weren't going to, they just don't go to LSU. So, but good for Arch Manning. He's now going off to Texas. NBA draft last night. Paolo Banchero goes number one overall to the Orlando Magic. Kind of a surprise because people thought Jabari Smith Jr. would go. Instead, he goes third to the Houston Rockets, which must have felt great to land him. Also, Chet Holmgren is going to, with Sam Presti, who has been building this thing up from scratch, stayed put, even though Jabari Smith Jr. was on the board, and stayed with Holmgren. Holmgren is so, I don't know how to put him when I see him on the court. Does it feel like his arms, it's almost like unnatural the way his arms are that long? Do you ever see the way he's his wingspan? It's like somebody did a meme of him as Richard Reed of the Fantastic Four. Like, that seems to be the right way to put him. He's just got the longest arms and just swats things out of the sky like nobody's business. Just done. He plays too good a defense to fail. He's I don't think he's going to be a bust. Some of these guys will bust out. They always do. There's always a couple in the list that don't quite pan out. But he's not going to be one of them. He plays too good of a defense. But it also must be kind of cool to be 19, 20, however old he is, and the bosses want you to bulk up. And they go, eat, put on some weight, and you're now rich. How much barbecue can you eat? What kind of diet are you going to need to put weight on? He's going to have to put on some weight. But as we were talking about yesterday, one of the problems with that is some players come into the NBA undersized, and we know they have to, got to put on some weight. Scott Spinelli talked about this yesterday. If you're an organization, you got to be really careful. It is not take the kid to McDonald's and have him eat, 5,000 calories a day to put on weight. You got to do it over time. You got to do it with weight training. You got to do it where you're building it up slowly, because you don't want to destroy something about their game. Now, it's not quite an apples to apples comparison, but just hear me out on this. This is what happens to players in golf, right? They, like Bryson DeChambeau, David Duval had this problem too, right? They have a physique. They build a swing around the physique. Then something happens. They bulk up. They go on. They do Pilates. They do yoga. They stretch more. They turn into a muscle machine. The swing is affected by that, right? And then they don't have the same swing again. So it's a whole new muscle memory, and sometimes it throws them out of the game on the highest level. It's not an apples to apples comparison. I get it. But if you're Holmgren and you're used to playing a particular way with a particular quickness and a particular style, the more weight you put on could throw you off enough where you're not quite the best defender. You're losing a step or two, and at the NBA, you lose a step or two, it usually means a bucket. So you want to be careful. If you're bulking Holmgren up, you want to bulk him up to a point where it's not so dramatic. Like, all summer long, you've just been feeding him like Big Macs, onion rings, ding dongs, and Pringle chips. Like, and washing it down with 2-liter bottles of soda. Like, he's going to bulk up in the wrong way. But it also could lose his game a little bit. Even if you gave him the healthy stuff to bulk up, like he's drinking healthy shakes that are high calories. He's got to bulk up in a way that he uses that increase. He's going along with the increase and not letting it affect the way he plays. He eventually learns a little bit different way of playing. Because right now, he's been playing at the college level where not everybody is his size. He's clearly had an advantage in his conference. He was one of the best players in the country because he was tall and lanky and had an unbelievable wingspan. Against the NBA, there are guys who can play against that. So if he loses a step or two, that's going to cause some problems. So Oklahoma City's got to be pretty careful with him. But other than that, nothing really threw me for a loop yesterday. I wasn't overly blown away. But you know what else? I have to be honest. I think a lot of times we take these drafts in the NBA and we sort of put an NFL draft mentality into them. So what I mean by that is, in the NBA, you should draft the best player on the board, right? Because too many teams have been burned by, I need a big man, whoops, I took the big man, and the Michael Jordan is of the draft is going to the next team over, right? Too many teams have been burned by that. You draft the best player, and then you work around that best player. That's just the way it is. You may need a power forward, but if you have a can't-miss scorer, a guard that is just falling into your lap, you take him and you figure it out later. The NFL doesn't really do that. The NFL, we know this time and time again, where people will say, no, they'll draft the best player available. They don't draft the best player available. If you don't need a quarterback, you don't draft the quarterback. If you don't need offensive line, you don't draft it. If you need linebackers, that's who you get. Right? Now, there'll be a few teams that say, oh, we'll take the best player available, no problem. I remember the Steelers, and I talked about this before, when the Steelers a year ago drafted Najee Harris, I wanted defense. Got to go defense. Najee Harris came available, and I was like, nah, I don't care. Get him. It's great. It's fun. He's a running back. He'll score touchdowns. Pick defense later. Sometimes that happens, but for the most part, that's where you get these sort of NFL grades where they take a team like the Philadelphia Eagles and they go, oh, you know, the Eagles had a lot of problems with this position and they did nothing to shore that up, right? You know, I don't care what it is, defensive line, offensive line, wide receiver, running back, whatever it is. They did nothing in the draft. It's hard to grade NBA teams because if they take good players, right, that player can make an immediate impact on a five-man rotation, right? Where you're out on the court, you're one of 20% of what is out on the court, rather than one of 11 out of 22 plus special teams to make up a complete game. So in the NBA, when people say, oh, I give them a C, well, are you giving them a C because they didn't pick the right person? Or are you giving them a C because that player isn't as good as that team is making him out to be? That's the conflict. So when you see grades of the draft, you got to kind of pull yourself away from what we normally expect in grades when it comes to the NFL. Because you can give a team a bad first round grade if they didn't address a need, but you can give an NBA team a failing grade if the player kind of stinks and somehow, some way, he got drafted 13th.
And wouldn't you say this too, that if you draft a player, like, you know, top five pick in the NBA, you're anticipating that they're going to make an immediate impact.
Absolutely.
Rather than, like, in the NFL, you know, we give the benefit of the doubt. Like Trevor Lawrence, we're not throwing him out yet.
Yeah, we're not saying Trevor Lawrence is a bust because the Jags had the number one pick this year under his guidance, right?
No. And last year, and the year before.
Of course, right? Of course not. But no, you're right.
We're sitting there, like, we allow certain allowances because, you know, and I know we use the cliches like, oh, the NFL is a much tougher game than, you know, it is in college. But it's the fact that, I mean, it is.
Yeah.
College football is, NFL football is almost, or college football is almost watered down a little bit because you have players coming from all over the place.
And it's nearly impossible in the NFL for a rookie to change a franchise around. Because he's one, again, of many players, and he can play well and win Rookie of the Year, but your team can still be awful.
Yeah.
Right? It's it. But in the NBA, it doesn't take much to get to the playoffs. You've got to be one of eight teams in the conference. Even if you're not very good and you're a lottery team, it could take a few wins and boom, you're right in the picture. No one's predicting you to win a championship, but you can have an immediate impact if you have the ball a lot. Right? If you are one of these players. And Banchero should have the ball a lot for Orlando. I think Chet Holmgren's going to see a lot of minutes in Oklahoma City. I think Jabari Smith and Kevin Porter and Jalen Green in Houston are going to be on the court a lot together.
Yeah.
They should do something, even in their first year, to make you feel like the team is somewhat better. No one's predicting them to win championships, but you expect that there will be some level of impact. In the NFL, nobody really thinks that. Like, even if you draft, like, Kenny Pickett, I still think the Steelers are probably going to finish in second to last. I don't know where the Browns are going to be with this Deshaun Watson situation, but probably second to last in the division. Maybe last. I'm cool with that because I'm looking at the long play. I can't expect roll out in the NFL and win 12 games.
You know, that. And when was the last time you saw an 18- or 19-year-old NFL player have a serious impact on the team?
Right. Right. Because they usually are 20, 21, 22.
Never. The answer is never.
Yeah. Never.
You know, yeah, but in basketball, you know, LeBron James straight out of high school had an immediate impact with the Cavs. And he's going up against grown men.
Sure, sure. And so again, it's a totally different way of grading. But because football is king, we tend to sort of look at these grades, or at least the way I think it's hard to be a GM in the NBA because it's a little easier in the NFL in terms of the draft board because you got so many people kind of coming at you, but you also know, hey guys, we really, as much as we want some of these key players, we can't bring in board. Like, I can't draft a quarterback if I have a star quarterback. If I'm Jacksonville and I had the number one pick, I'm not taking a quarterback. I have one. I don't need another one. The NBA, you could have three guards on the roster. You could sacrifice one to get the next up and coming kid, right? You can have three guys that handle the ball great, score, and you can go, we can get around one of these guys because we can't turn down this kind of talent. It's just nothing. There's nothing we can do. Unless you're the Kings, because when Jaden Ivey's on the board, what's the first thing you do? Who's the next guy on the list?
Or three down.
I'll go Keegan Murray because I can't take the guy that's the obvious number four pick, unless you're the Sacramento Kings. Exactly. And if you're the Knicks, you just want to confuse everybody like a Wordle puzzle and just go all over the place.
That way, we're still sitting there going, like, did the Knicks have a good draft?
Yeah, we have no idea.
Did they? I mean, I think they did.
The Knicks.
Maybe they blew it all up. I don't know.
God, can't they just pick one guy and go, superstar, megastar, future MVP? No. Why would they? Although they did, reports where they went really hard after Jaden Ivey for that fourth pick. And you know what the Kings said? You really should talk to Detroit.
Yeah.
Because we have no interest in taking him. And the Knicks like, what?
Who?
Yeah, we're not going to.
Detroit? No. Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. We like that fourth pick. We like that kid Ivy. Oh, you do? Oh, you do. We're taking him. So what do you got to offer? Shoot. Kings.
Well, here, call this number.
Yeah, call this number. Ask, yeah. Golly, what a mess. What a mess the Knicks were last night. I don't know. You know what it is? Sometimes you can't even explain it. It's like sometimes you can't tell your fan base what you did, and I don't think the Knicks can sell this, what they did. Draft a guy, trade a guy, get picks, then move. It's too complicated. It's Wake Up Call in Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay at Total Wine & More, you're going to discover a whole lot more, like the friendly smile of an expert guide, ready to help you find that perfect bottle and the confidence of knowing you just found something special. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. B21. All right, so as I said at the top of the hour, it is I tried to avoid this thing, but the Yankees are rock solid at 52-18, winning again last night in the bottom of the ninth inning. Aaron Judge coming through, an RBI single that drove in Jose Trevino that won the game, but it was Aaron Hicks who hit a three-run home run that tied it up in the Bronx. They are cruising. They have got the 98 Yankees is the last team I can remember that was just this overall dominant. And they went on to beat the Padres in the World Series that year. But this team is amazing. And it's kind of making not a mockery, that's a little too strong of a word, but when you went in the season at the beginning of the year, it was like, look at the AL East. Toronto is loaded. The Tampa Bay Rays are the defending division champs. Boston might be pretty good. The Yankees are going to be pretty good. Like, only Baltimore, like, the Yankees have got a 12.5 game lead, and they just don't look back. All they do is win, and they win consistently and consecutively. Again, they have a 146-run differential that is the best in the majors. I mean, it's just...
Can we say it's annoying?
It's annoying.
It's annoying.
Sure it is. Because even when you're like, the Astros, like last night, and you're 46-43-26, that's still 9 games off.
Yeah.
Of what the Yankees are doing.
No, you know, I mean, all eyes are looking at the 2001 Mariners right now.
Yeah.
You know, that record might fall this year.
They played 70 games, the Yankees. And they're 50, they won 52 of them. Right? We haven't even gotten to the halfway point yet. And they have 70 games in, they've got 52 wins. Again, they were pointing out this equals the 27 Yankees. This best this Yankee team.
Yeah.
This best that Yankee. All these classic Yankee teams of the past. And they're just rolling along. And Aaron Judge is having just a monstrous season. And the Yankees better figure out a way to pay him. Right?
Always seems to happen too, right? Contract year.
Some people do not think he'll re-sign next season. Some people think that he won't. Now,
Where is he going to go?
That's what I said, right? Like, in
the
end,
go to the Mets.
People go, I don't know. I don't think he'll be re-signed. I know other teams have money, but you know who has a lot of money? The Yankees. You know, have more money? The Yankees. You know, be willing to spend money? The Yankees. Like, you may not like the way you've been treated, and they kind of went into this season just going, oh, no, we'll get you next year. Like, well, I want it now. And they're like, no. But in the end, the Yankees are like, go play free agency and then come back to us.
Now, do the Steinbrenners have a play they need to fund?
Yeah, right?
They're going to ship them off to Boston?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, listen, I get it. This is a wacky time, wacky era in sports where, you know, it's like, oh, you know, so many teams have money and who knows where he's going to go. You know, and an unlikely suitor like the Padres will come out and be like, oh, we'll spend $500 million on him.
Yeah.
We're still trying to figure out where the Padres are getting this money. But it's the Yankees. I mean, what are they, top? Are they? I think they're number two in payroll.
Yeah.
The Dodgers, I believe, are number one.
Exactly.
You know, he's not going to Minnesota. He's not going to the Royals. I mean, pick your team. I mean, there's only like three or four teams that are going to be able to afford them.
They do have the arbitration hearing today, so they'll sort some of that out. But again, there's a lot of people who – Buster Olney is one of them, for example, who doesn't think that Aaron Judge will play for the Yankees next season. But I think
well, if they don't win, maybe that's the case, right?
Maybe that's the case, right. Right, that's maybe that is the case.
Maybe exactly. It'll be. Maybe the Yankees will find a trade and go, let's just trade him to the Angels for Trout.
Sure, he's asking for $21 million. The Yankees were offering $17 million, and that's what they'll be hearing today. Today, because today's Friday.
That's right.
So, but they couldn't agree on a long-term deal. This is not the first time the Yankees have dealt with something like this. Just maybe not on this extreme in terms of going mid-season arbitration like this. This is not the first time the Yankees have had a player, couldn't agree on a long-term deal, but eventually they sort it out. Eventually it comes to, I mean, look, if you're Aaron Judge, you got to be really angry, right, at the organization. If you're going to leave, you're going to leave for spite, because the Yankees would be able to match, and it's fun to play in New York when you are winning, right? Like that's one of the big things. Yes, there are other great baseball markets. The Cardinals, St. Louis is a wonderful baseball town. There are other great, Boston is a great baseball town. There's other places where, you know, baseball is really high up there on the hierarchy. But when you're in New York and you're a Yankee and you're winning, there's no other place that's better. You might be equal to certain cities, like I think winning in Boston is just as good as winning in New York. I think winning for the Cubs a World Series, because we've only seen it once in our lifetime, would be good. But there's no place that's better. There's not a better city in America to win a World Series championship than New York. There's might be cities equal, but there's not one standing above them, because that's, I mean, the tradition of that city and the tradition of that team. And Aaron Judge, why would you want to leave a team if you know they'll give you the money, right? If in the end they'll give you the money, why would you leave a team that's 52-18 going even next season? No, you take their money. You say, you know what? It was business. It wasn't personal. I enjoy being a Yankee. Thanks for giving me my money. Let's go win some World Series titles. But if they don't give you the money, then you leave. Then you leave. And if they don't, whatever it is, if you don't get the long-term deal you want, you leave. But we'll find out today exactly what the arbitration will be. All right, Arch Manning going to Texas. What does it all mean? We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I was saying earlier this morning that a lot of times with these college recruits, these high school recruits are heading to college, most of it is local, right? There's very few that just carry over onto this national level where everybody from coast to coast knows who that individual is. That's why Arch Manning is one of the premier college recruits or high school recruits in the country. He landed with Texas. Steve Sarkisian has brought him in. So what does this mean? Brian Davis joins us from the Austin American Statesman to talk Longhorns and Arch Manning coming in 2023. How are you, Brian?
Morning. How you doing?
Good. All right. You're close. Obviously, you're close to the nucleus of this thing. When did you guys get a feeling like Arch Manning was going to go to Texas?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I think that Texas has been in the lead for a while now, only because of how many visits that Arch and his father, Cooper, and his mom had made to Austin. Been to some unofficial visits, then took the official visit, the official recruiting visit. That would have been last weekend. And it was widely known that he was only going to take three official visits to Georgia, Alabama, and Texas. And Texas was the last one. And I think the feeling was that, you know, Sark would get the last word. And then once that official visit happened, it was just a waiting game. You know, is it going to be quick? Is it going to be closer to the start of his high school season? You know, no one really knew. And because it is the Mannings, no one's really going to push him to make a decision, right? Everything was done on their timetable. And, you know, it certainly caught my attention when a brand new social media account popped up that, you know, was blue check mark verified of Arch Manning's. And so you start following that, and you notice it has zero tweets up until yesterday.
Yeah.
And the only tweet on that account is committed to Texas, hook 'em. So clearly this has been planned out. And, you know, when it happens, you just, you know, everybody ring the five-alarm fire because that's when it happens.
We know these recruits, they go to these schools and for a variety of reasons, but basically the number one reason is the relationship with the coach, the coaching staff, or the people that have done the homework and have come to their houses and talked to them. When did Steve Sarkisian get on this? How quickly was he on this? How quickly did he develop a relationship with the family so that Arch Manning feels comfortable enough to call him a head coach in 2 years?
Well, I think one of the most interesting comments yesterday was from Nelson Stewart, you know, his high school coach, Arch's high school coach, when he told me, he said, you know, I remember that Steve and quarterbacks coach A.J. Milwee, he said, I remember when we were getting going on Zoom at the start of the pandemic, right? And he was just laughing. He said, you know, you remember how bad we all were at Zoom, you know, when COVID started. He said, you know, they're fumbling around on the screen, and then it's like, oh, hey, look, Steve Sarkisian's on my computer screen, you know, right? And he said he remembers that vividly. So if you think back from the time, I mean, obviously that's, you know, we're 2 years into that now. And so I would assume that, you know, it's one of those deals, the instant that Arch becomes a recruitable athlete where you start talking to him, that's when that's going on. You know, another thing that Nelson Stewart told me yesterday, he says, I've talked to A.J. Milwee more than my own wife the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? And I thought that was a pretty, you know, telling comment. I mean, look, I don't think that this is a reflection on Alabama or Georgia. I don't think those fan bases have anything to be upset about, quite honestly. But this is going to be what life is like with Texas and the SEC. They're going to get in there and battle for all these recruits. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that I keep hearing is that, man, you know, Texas is doing so good. If they can just get football going, you know, it'll be a monster. You know, and one player does not guarantee anything, quite frankly, sure. Right? You know, in my opinion, Sark needs to more offensive linemen. He needs to find more defensive playmakers. There's a long way to go before, you know, you put him in the CFP, a long, long way to go. But, you know, Arch is a major turning point, no doubt.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I obviously agree with you. I think that's right. I think we've seen a lot of these high-profile quarterbacks go to a particular location, and it doesn't pan out to a national championship or even a conference championship sometimes. But today,
How much of this is Steve Sarkisian? What's his status today, landing the biggest fish in college recruiting?
You know, it's funny. I really do feel like that Texas fans should back off a little bit, because it's like, wow, they just got Arch Manning. But also, too, it's like, wait a minute, this dude just went 5-7 and lost to Kansas.
You're right.
You know? I mean, so it's a little bit of both. So it's like, hey, Texas fans, back off. And hey, Texas fans, you should keep the heat on, right? And I always liken it to, you know, people say, oh, this coach is on the hot seat. Is this coach on the hot seat? Blah blah blah. Listen, at Texas, the pilot light never goes out.
Yeah.
Okay, that thing is always on under the head football coach. And so, but you know what? I'll say this: Steve knows it. He knows that what happened last year was not acceptable. I mean, he admitted it at the Houston Touchdown Club. He said, you know, 5-7 sucks. You know, he owns it. So, look, I mean, they know that they got to get it. They got to get it going quick. But you know, with Quinn Ewers, Bijan Robinson, there's a lot of excitement about the offense this year. I still have questions about the line and the defense. But you know, with Quinn followed by Arch Manning, I mean, this is a pretty long runway for this head coach now as they go towards the SEC.
And how do you see that Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning? Is this he gets to compete right away? Is it his right away? I mean, I know it's a year away. I get it, but it speculate a little bit on what this might look like when he finally arrives in Austin.
Well, if you know, to hear some of the recruiting experts tell it, is that you know, there's a belief that Arch Manning would be open to a redshirt season, right? And let's go with that for just a second. Let's say that Quinn just completely tears it up this year, and Texas finishes with a 7-5, 8-4 record, but there's real, real signs of major progress, right? Okay. Well, then you go into 23, Quinn would be the starter, Arch is the red shirt, Quinn has another great year, and then he becomes eligible for the NFL draft after that point, because he would have been out of high school for 3 years, right, when you factor in the Ohio State year. So, you know, there's a possibility that Quinn is the starter for 2 years, and then you turn it over to Arch for 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is, right? So that's one scenario. Another scenario, obviously, is that Quinn, you know, comes in here and plays okay, but doesn't, you know, it's not a Hall of Fame level, and then here comes Arch, and they battle it out in 23. I mean, who knows? So I just think there's a lot of ways this could go. You know, I've had people email me going, okay, well, which one's going to transfer? Well, you know, listen, if this was any other family, I would say, yeah, keep an eye on the portal. But these are the Mannings, okay?
Right.
This is the first family of sports royalty, you know? I mean, do you honestly think they haven't taken all this into account and thought all the angles out? I mean, this is not a wishy-washy family, so I just don't see, you know, Arch coming here, sitting, you know, playing 1 year, it not going well, and him transferring out. I find that hard to envision.
I want to ask you something, and more of a big picture thing when it comes to this program. It was a number of years ago, Sam Ehlinger made that "we're back" thing at the end of the Sugar Bowl against Georgia, and that has been a lot of. That's been the arrow for a lot of people to throw at this program when it loses football games. That it's on a young quarterback who got emotional, and it wasn't a proclamation by the school. It was a young kid who felt really great beating Georgia. But is that plagued this? How much has that plagued this program in terms of the public image? People love to take their shots at Texas, even more so when they boasted a little bit that they were back on the national scene.
I mean, you hit the nail exactly on the head. You know, Sam Ehlinger is a dyed-in-the-wool orange blood. He is Texas Longhorn through and through. And you're exactly right. Standing on that stage that night, that was in a very excited Longhorn, you know, making that statement. I mean, listen, nobody wanted Texas to be back more than Sam. I can promise you, right? But, you know, Tom Herman that night winced. I know the athletic director winced. High-level administrators were like, "Oh, don't say that," you know. And you're exactly right. I mean, that's become a cliche punchline now. And look, if we're being honest, people at Texas hate it. They absolutely hate it that's out there, but it is out there. And so, you know, what's so funny is that Texas people hate the whole "we're back" thing way more than they hate the horns down. You know, the horns down to most Texas people is a gimmick. It's a laugh, and they don't understand why opponents do it. Right.
Yeah.
Because to them, they'll tell you all it just shows is that we're in their head. Right. Which is funny, which is a whole funny psychological thing, too. But anyway, you're exactly right. You know, Texas isn't back. The line that's being used here is, look, we suck until we don't. Right.
Yeah.
That's what everybody around here says to me. And that's the general vibe. And, you know, right now, I fully believe in the Bill Parcells line. You are what your record says you are. And right now, you're a 5-7 program that just lost to Kansas. So they got a long way to go.
And I know, listen, I don't have a stake in Texas football at all. I just admire them from afar when they do well. But I do know, as a guy who spends most of his time in the SEC waiting for them and Oklahoma to come into the conference, college football is better when they're good. They're better when whether they're villainous or we're admiring them like the Vince Young days. When Texas football is good, it makes college football way more interesting than when they're not.
It absolutely is. I mean, you know, I know people want to dog on Texas, and that's fine. It is what it is. But, you know, it's a national brand with worldwide cachet. It just is. And, you know, there's a reason why ESPN puts their games in prime time. There's a reason why that they are picked to play in high-profile TV segments, you know, because, you know, people love to hate or rag on or praise Texas. You know, it just is what it is. And it's like something, you know, I give credit to Chris Blonsky, the longtime Texas administrator. She told me a long, long time ago, and I've never forgotten this, she says, "Hey, Texas is sexy," right? And she's right, and it is, and it always has been.
Yep.
And that's what the beauty of going to the SEC is. You're mixing two teams that have incredible brands with the best college football brand in America. And obviously I think it's going to be great.
Brian, great stuff. I hope you come on again as we get closer to the season to talk about this version of Texas football when we get closer to the fall. Thank you so much. A great conversation.
You bet. Anytime.
You got it. Brian Davis, again, Austin Statesman in Texas, obviously with the Arch Manning signing, but also an overall point about the Longhorns. I'll touch on that when we come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay, a Total Wine and More, you'll discover a whole lot more. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly, B21. I liked Brian a lot. I thought he was great. Again, I'll go back to that big question thing I said. I think that it's a little unfair to put the onus of the Texas program on an enthusiastic young man who beat Georgia at the Sugar Bowl. All right? That's what happened in 2018 when Sam Ellinger said, "We're back." It was an enthusiastic. I mean, look, if you go into the deep, deep, deep trenches of SEC football history, okay, the Sugar Bowl is what you played for. Now, it's not so much today. I get it. It's the playoff. It's not the same level it's not the Super Bowl of the conference, if you will. But you go back in the day, like Billy Cannon at LSU days, the Sugar Bowl was what you played for. You let the national championship play itself out. You let the voters figure it out. You played to go to the Sugar Bowl. So Georgia's going to the Sugar Bowl. It's SEC territory. And Texas comes in and beats them, and Sam Ellinger gets overly excited and says, "We're back." And they're not back, and they weren't back, and they weren't. And like he said, they all knew it. They all knew it. But what happened? people who don't like Texas, people who want to kind of pick on Texas and sort of attack their hubris and attack their arrogance, every time they lost, every time they had to fire Tom Herman and they lost to Kansas last year or whatever, they threw at the "we're back" thing. You see it on memes. You'll see it on social media posts. Everything. Everything. But the reality of it is like he said, they're the kind of brand that doesn't go away. I went to South Carolina. When South Carolina is good and they're a nationally ranked team, like when Steve Spurrier had them, you know it. You know it. They're in the rankings. They're in the lead of the East, of the best division, the best conference in football. You know it. When South Carolina's no good, they don't exist. They are irrelevant. They are not talked about. They are not buzzed about. They are not memed at. Nobody in the country cares. That's the difference between them and Texas. And a lot of things different between them and Texas, but you know what I'm getting at. When Texas stinks, you know they stink. You know they stink. Because people won't stop talking about it. They don't disappear. They don't get to go away and take a get on a four-year plan of being good. No matter when they play, if they're not good, everybody knows about it. When you add an enthusiastic quarterback on top of that, saying "we're back" and everyone's like, "yeah, we'll see," and they don't live up to it, you know it even more than when they just have a bad record. That's what Texas is dealing with, because they're Texas. It's a wake-up call.